5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Hey, this is not first class.
Circus! Afro Circus! Afro Circus! Afro
Welcome to The Clown Car, a parenting podcast where a dad
and a mom
talk about what it's like being the ringleaders in our own circus.
We are not professionals. The only credentials we have are four kids. So do your research and find what works for you.
Hello, fellow ringleaders. We are your hosts, Barry and Crystal Ricks, and we are super excited today. We have a special guest that is on the show today. And we're trying to determine, like, how should we introduce her? Should we, like, have big, long paragraphs talking about, you know, who she is? But we...
Trumpets and fanfare.
Trumpets and red carpet and everything. But today we have Jody Moore on the show with us. She is an accomplished life coach, which is a really awesome thing that she does. But she also has a podcast and business called Bold New Mom, which we are big fans of and that we listen to. And we wanted to have her come on the show. So, Jody, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. Next time I will be looking out for the red carpet.
That's right. We'll make sure to have
but
that.
But for this time, we'll let it slide.
Great. Jody, why don't you tell the listeners maybe a little bit more about yourself?
Okay, great. Yeah, so my name is Jody Moore. I also have four children, which feel like eight children some days.
Yes.
I like you guys said, I'm the owner of Bold New Mom. I'm a life coach, and I run my own podcast as well. I basically spend my time trying to help, I work with a lot of women, but also some men, parents in general, to be more confident, more empowered, and more at peace with themselves and their lives. And I'm fortunate to get to do that. My emphasis is on the mind. So everything that I teach is based on what we know about how the human brain works and human behavior in general. So that's kind of what I do in a nutshell.
That's awesome. Well, I think that's really cool. What a awesome thing to do in your life. So what do? I help people every day. That's my job. I help people. So
I tell people what to do.
Yes.
They listen.
That's right.
I have to tell you though, you're kind of an overnight sensation here because one of my friends
in our town. Yeah. Well, or amongst our friends, at least.
One of my friends was looking for something and found Bold New Mom, and she started listening to it and then was like, Crystal, you have to listen to this. So we both started listening to it, and now we're like, you have to listen to Bold New Mom to everyone. And so we have this group of people that are all listening to it, and I've spread it to my friends in Utah, and then she shared it on Facebook. So we're trying to, you've got some free advertising.
That's right.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It keeps me going to hear that somebody's listening besides my mom. So thank you.
Hey, our moms don't even listen to this show, so you got to one-up us on us there. So thank you for being here. We talk about stories of the week, and that is sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad, but that's what parenting is all about. So we're going to do a kind of little round table here. We'll each share a story of the week. And then Jody's actually here to share a lot of great information to us as parents on how we can accomplish some troubles that are common amongst all parents and do that. So let's start with stories of the week.
It's time for the stories of the week.
Crystal, do you want to start this week?
Sure. My story actually happened today.
Today.
Our story.
Okay.
We do something called MDATAC, and that is Mommy and Daddy Alone Time After Church.
Mommy and Daddy Alone Time.
So when we get home from church, we say, okay, it's MDATAC, and we go to our room. And today, we were doing that in our room, and someone knocks on the door, and so... Our kids know they do not open the
door.
They
don't open the door for, you know, they'll talk through the door, but they don't open the door.
Right. And so our 7-year-old, I hear her standing at the door and she goes, hang on, my parents have to put their clothes back on. And we're shouting down the hall like, Jay, don't say that.
What are you saying?
And so, because we go go in our room and get changed out of our church clothes.
Yeah,
and regular
we're relaxing,
clothes, so.
And so. The,
but anyway, I open the door, and my friend's just standing there dying, laughing, and she's like, "Aren't you glad I was the one at the door?"
Luckily, it was a good friend of ours, so she just got a kick out of it.
Yeah,
so
that was our. It's kind of like. I remember someone calling me or calling my mom when I was little, and I was like, "Sorry, my mom's pooping," and she was like, "Chris, don't say that." So I got it returned to me.
You just had to, you had to add the poop in there, right?
I did. I'm sorry. I'm notorious for sharing bathroom.
We can't have a show without Crystal talking some form of toilet humor. Mm-hmm. So that's lots of fun, and of course, you know, kids say the darnest things, right? When you least expect them, and it's not like. Like, Crystal was headed to the door as she was saying that, and so it's just
fully
like,
clothed.
Fully clothed. The clothes were on.
It wasn't that kind of alone time.
Right.
So my story of the week actually happened yesterday on Saturday. We had a great opportunity. Our church was doing a service project, and Crystal and I like, well, how can we do this service project with our kids? You know, it was going to a shelter where homeless people go, and we were going to go there and be able to help deep clean a little bit and provide a, kind of, we did a food drive on the side as well. And so we're like, okay, what we can do is we can provide babysitting for all the other people that have kids so they can go serve. So we showed up to do that, and unfortunately, not a lot of other people with kids showed up. Just, you know, either one parent showed up to come do the project, and we're like, okay, well, what do we do now? And our bishop from the ward, he's like, well, you guys can, maybe you could still go to this project and go
no,
do...
No, he didn't say maybe. He's like, okay, Rick's family, you
should
go
do
this. And we're like, wait, what?
So
we weren't planning on that.
Yeah. So we decided to go. So we went, and it turned out to be a super positive experience. We went there. The kids.
We thought it was going to be awful.
We thought it was going to be awful because we thought, oh, we're going to have to keep an eye on our kids. They're going to get into stuff. But no, we got in there, and right away the kids grabbed a cleaning cloth, and they started wiping down any surface that they could find. And then we helped deep clean a couple of the rooms, and the kids got so into it that our oldest, Grayson, he came into the rooms. He's like, I'll mop this room if you want me to. And we're like, okay. So, you know, we did a couple of the harder areas, and we let him do one of the easier
right.
areas to
but
mop.
But part of me was like, why aren't you guys like this at home?
Yeah.
What's the deal?
Yeah, why aren't you, why
you're
aren't
still
you
serving
cleaning
me.
Like this at home? Mop our kitchen. But, yeah, so it was just a really cool opportunity to show our kids service towards those that are less fortunate than ourselves, and that they got so into it. So it's kind of like a parenting win. We're like, yeah, we did something right on a Saturday instead of just sitting at home and doing nothing, you know, relaxing or whatever. So that was a good highlight for us. And
I share
me
the poop
week.
Story, and you share the
Crystal
enlightening awesome
poop stories for Crystal service.
Had to one up you.
That's right. I, you know, I have to, you know, do that some way. You know, she's so amazing. I have to, you know, one up her every once in a while. So
you know, we're gonna be on our best behavior because Jody's on the show.
Are we? We're not gonna show our true colors. Jody, tell us. Did you have an experience this week, whether good or bad, with your children?
Well, of course, I always have a lot of experiences. What's coming to mind for me is just that this weekend we've been celebrating Halloween a little early in our neighborhood. At the kids' school, there was a carnival one night, and then the next night we did our trunk or treat up at the church. And so I've just been relishing in the fact that my kids have been so happy, like all of them at once for several hours. I feel like that's so unusual. And of course, the house is a disaster. And, you know, people probably haven't brushed their teeth enough in the last 48 hours. But
that's okay.
Everybody's happy. I'm just taking it in while I can.
Right.
That's awesome. No, yeah. I mean, that's a good thing just to. How often can you say that? Like, oh, my kids are happy at the same time.
And your hair looks nice.
That's
so
right.
Well, thank prizes. You.
She's pulling it off. She's
an added win.
That's right. And I look good, too. Yes. So yeah, so that's great. That's awesome. It's always nice that everybody's happy, especially, you know, mom at home being happy. You know, what's the thing, you know, when mom's not happy, no one's happy type
right.
of thing.
That is true.
It's so true. So yeah, so we covered that and great fun stories. But now let's get into
the meat.
You had the milk. Let's have the meat now. So
let's have the Jody.
Jody and I had a conversation earlier this week, and Crystal and I thought it would be a great chance to talk to Jody and pick her brain of all the great experience that she's had as a life coach to talk about the stories that she's heard from parents about the most common struggles that they have. And then she came up with a couple of great things. One of them primarily being something that I'll admit that I struggle with is getting frustrated with your kids to the point where you start yelling at your kids.
Is this common?
This is everybody I know and myself at times, at least.
We're normal. Yeah. Yay.
Very normal. Congratulations. You're normal. Yeah. Okay. You want me to speak to that little bit?
Yes.
Touch on that. Tell us, you know, maybe some of the, you know, tools or techniques that you shared mm-hmm. with others on how we can conquer this monster of frustration and yelling.
Yeah, so it is an answer to your question, Crystal, very common. It's one of the most common things I talk with my clients about, because most everybody recognizes that it's not our best parenting and not what we want for our kids necessarily. It doesn't make them feel loved and all the things we want for them. But I think we all have a certain point we get to when we run out of patience and we run out of willpower, right? So a couple things. First of all, like I said, I want you to understand something about your brain. This is what I teach all my clients in the beginning, is that we have this lower brain, the primitive brain, that's driving 80% of the time. And that's a good thing. That helps us function efficiently as human beings. It makes it so that we don't have to think in our higher cerebral cortex brain about everything, because that would be exhausting if we did. Right. So you think about the small habits you have, like brushing the teeth, for example, once you get that habit down, which my kids haven't quite yet. but they do know when they go to brush their teeth. We all know that the toothpaste goes on the fuzzy end of the toothbrush. Right. We don't have to stop thinking about where do I put the toothpaste? Right. We pick it up. We know what to do. We don't have to think about it. So that lower brain has memorized how to brush your teeth effectively. And the lower brain is at its, you know, its most basic function is to keep us alive. So it's concerned with how do I stay alive and get what I need to stay alive? So how do I seek more pleasure and how do I avoid pain right now in this moment? It's not real concerned with what's going to happen next week or next year or in 10 years. It's concerned with this moment right now. How do I survive? And the higher brain, on the other hand, knows that most of the time our survival isn't in question. In fact, we're not going to die. The lower brain always says you're going to die, right? And the higher brain knows that most of the time we're perfectly safe, and that sometimes sacrificing some short-term pleasure or experiencing short-term pain is in our interest in the long run, right? So I teach you that because when our kids are little and doing what kids do, right, which is not always obeying, certainly not being quiet, not cleaning up after themselves.
Not listening to me.
Right? All the things that we wish they would do, then our lower brain, again, is saying, this is bad, this is a problem, and you might die, right? And the higher brain overrides it for a while and tries to be patient and calm, but then it has a limit. Our higher brain energy is in limited supply. So that said, the worst thing that I think you can do is to beat yourself up for it when it happens, okay? Because the lower brain doesn't like negative emotion, or it doesn't like to feel bad. That is an indication to it that we're in danger. So when that happens, we're already frustrated or overwhelmed or what have you with our child, and then we yell, and then we feel terrible afterwards. It's more negative emotion that now the lower brain is again like, see, you're a mess and you might die.
Right.
So the first step, go ahead, Barry.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's just really interesting how the brain and all its chemicals work in that aspect, and how, you know, learning like what you're teaching us right now, you know, I really didn't know anything about the lower brain and everything, but obviously, you know, obviously it makes sense to me at least. And it's just amazing how the brain works, and in all aspects of our life, even when it comes to yelling at our kids.
Now, if only I could use the brain to overcome the brain.
Right? Yes, great. You're exactly right. It's what you have to do. You have to access the higher brain. But ultimately, we want to change the lower brain a little bit too. So that memorized part of our brain that knows, like, hey, you know what? Because in fact, I don't know about you guys, but when I do lose my patience and yell, like, it's usually like I've asked them to do something 6 or 7 times and they've ignored me.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. That's always my thing. It's just like, I asked you to do this already. Like,
why can't you listen?
5 times. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't get done. And then we get a little more harsh in our tone or what have you. And then suddenly they jump up and do it. So the lower brain takes note that worked. Right. And that was easy and fast. Yeah. And so it starts to memorize, just like putting toothpaste on the fuzzy end. It's saying, just do that. That's so much easier and faster and gets us what we want. So it's understandable, I guess, is what I'm saying. It's not really going to damage your kid in the long run. You can always circle back around and handle it and apologize. But step one really is just being kind to yourself and yet noticing it. So I recommend that rather than beat yourself up, you just start with like, oh, okay, of course I did that, because that's so effective. It works so well.
Yeah.
And I get to a certain point when my higher brain is tired and that lower brain knows that that works. Mm-hmm. So, of course, I did that. Now, I want to improve and get better, but I'm not going to beat myself up over the fact that it happened, is the first step. And then beyond that, we have to go on. We have to kind of dig into that lower brain and find the thoughts that are driving that behavior. So a lot of times it's just resistance, right? It's me believing that my kids should do what I tell them the first time, and they shouldn't make this mess, and they shouldn't, you know, gang up on one another. When really, that's all normal child behavior, right? And me trying to argue with reality is what's frustrating my lower brain. So we start from a place of, no, they should. Your kids are supposed to not listen to you. Your 6-year-old is supposed to not do what you tell him until the 8th time. And then as the parent, you're supposed to do whatever you think a good parent does. But our minds, another thing our brains want to do is go outside of us and resist and try to change the external things rather than come inside and decide, well, who do I want to be in that scenario? What kind of parent do I want to be? How do I want to feel? A lot of us don't think about it. We think our feelings just happen automatically, but we really do get to choose them because they're based on our thoughts. So I might want to be disappointed when my child doesn't do what I ask, but I don't want to be frustrated and lit up, which means I have to manage my own thoughts and manage myself. And that is a process that takes time. Step one is being kind to yourself. Step two is noticing and figuring out what thoughts you have. Like I said, it's usually things like they should behave differently or they shouldn't do what they do. So you uncover what those thoughts are. And then you'll start to notice yourself kind of in the middle of the behavior or sometimes just after it. And that has to happen for a little while where you just notice yourself and you kind of are separating yourself from those thoughts and from your behavior. And then step three is where you start to adapt some new, more empowering thoughts. Like, of course, my child is going to act that way because he's 5 and he hasn't learned yet. And this is what I get to do to try to teach him and try to maintain order in our home and in our lives.
Definitely. So
I feel like,
oh, go ahead.
I feel like something that I feel more disappointed in myself when I hear my kids yelling in the same tone that I use on them.
Yes.
Because to me, it's not just, suddenly it's not just my failure, but it's, I've passed it on. And so I already feel like, well, how do you backtrack and fix that? Except, when they've already caught on to the behavior.
Except when, when they start using that tone and you use the tone to tell them not to use the tone.
Yes. All the time.
So. Oh, be nice they're to your siblings. So good at mimicking us.
Yes,
right?
Definitely.
Yes. Yeah, you see yourself right back in it.
And one thing that Crystal and I have had this conversation before about how, you know, we have experienced it, and we know a lot of other parents have experienced it, where we treat our children like adults, mini adults, essentially, and that they should have these experiences and understand the way that we understand. But they don't, you know, it's like they're kids. They're not as developed. But for some reason in our minds, we're just like, okay, I tell you something to do, and in my mind, you should do it like an adult would do it, but you're not. And so it's just like, how?
Or I remember when we realized that kids aren't born with common sense.
Yeah.
They actually have to learn it. And although it seems really easy and duh to us, they don't get it, and it's so frustrating. Or,
yeah, like the phase, like, why did you do that? What were you thinking? It's like, they weren't, you know, they don't know why they did that, or, you know, they just, they don't have that built in their brains yet, and so asking silly questions like that don't help the situation either.
Right, but it's so hard to, like you're saying, to catch yourself before you go straight to the lower brain level.
Well, it's kind of about trying to figure out, you know, noticing those triggers that, you know, when my kid does that, how can I recognize that, the different triggers and what I'm doing? Something I, you know, one of my things is like, when I notice I start clenching up, or like I clench my teeth, or I my muscles, I'm like, whoa, I need to,
it's coming.
The Hulk is coming out. But you know, it's about trying to recognize that. And if you can recognize that before you Hulk out, then you can pull back. But it's so hard.
Yeah. Well, and I think, like you said, developmentally, they don't even have like the same brain waves, I want to say, that we do. Right.
Yeah.
In fact, they say an infant, like up until about age one, has the same brain activity that we have just before we fall asleep. You know, that phase where you're like, kind of know what's going on, but not fully conscious. Those are the same level brain waves that an infant has. And then they slowly grow until they're about 12 to 13 years old before they have the actual same brain activity that we do. So you're right. Knowing that they're at that point, at the same time as parents, it's our job to continue to teach them things. So that's where, like you guys are saying, letting go of the resistance of them and just know that is what he does. Of course, that's what he does. That's what he does every time. Why do I always expect it's going to change?
Yes.
And then what?
I'm saying that all the time.
All the time.
Right? Like... Yeah. And then you, to your point, Barry, you recognize, okay, who do I want to be then in that scenario? So you can still have, you know, consequences, and that's how kids learn things, is by having rewards and consequences and repetitive behavior. But the escalation, I try to remind myself, I don't need to feel all frustrated, even if we're talking about another adult. If somebody I think has wronged me or what have you, why am I the one having to feel all angry? Feeling angry feels terrible. I don't want to feel that way. I want to feel at peace. I want to feel bad about myself when I think I've done something wrong. That's healthy for me. But when someone else has, I get to feel at peace, and then I just do whatever I need to do to protect myself or to maintain order in our home.
Yeah, like you were saying, we are making the choice to be upset about when someone does something to us. Now, but it's interesting, though, because I'm a pretty laid back person, and when it comes to interacting with other adults, another adult could wrong me or say something wrong, you know, and I will just like try to, you know, roll it off my shoulders and anything. But when my kids, like, they don't do what I want them to do, it's just like, it's a totally different scenario.
It's like a trigger instant.
It's like an instant trigger. It's just like, you're supposed to do what I tell you to do.
Right.
So,
go ahead.
What's the difference between being kind to yourself and staying complacent in where you are?
Good question. So many of us believe that if we can beat ourselves up enough, then we'll change, right? If I really recognize that was so wrong, or even if you take it down to something simple like losing weight, if I just really tell myself over and over again how out of shape or overweight or whatever I am, then I won't want to eat the cookie. But the opposite happens.
I always right? want to eat the cookie.
I always do too. I just eat the cookie. But yeah, so that, again, that lower brain responds to positive action comes from positive, empowering emotions. I say empowering because sometimes the emotion may not feel great. Like if you think about bravery, for example, to be brave, I also have some fear in there. Mm-hmm. So the emotion may not always feel good, but it's still an empowering, inspiring emotion that gives me energy and drives my best action.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me, sorry to interrupt you, but that it just one of my favorite quotes is actually from President Monson, Thomas S. Monson, how he said that courage is not the absence of fear, but the mastery of it. Mm. And so I always liked that because people that are brave and courageous doesn't mean they're not afraid. It just mm-hmm. means they have gotten to a point where they can control that in a positive outlet.
So good.
It just reminded me that, and I love that quote. So
yeah, that's a really good one. So if I want to get better at parenting or whatever I'm doing with my kids, then rather than beat myself up over it, I want to begin by being kind to myself and saying, "Of course I did that. That was easy and it worked well and works every time." And then at the same time, I want to try to access inspiration. Like, what else am I capable of? Like right now, rather than view myself as like right now I'm below the bar and I'm failing, I want to be like, that was fine. I'm surviving and that worked really well. What else could I do? So it's kind of that mentality of, yeah, I did that. And guess what else I can do mm-hmm. rather than the opposite. And it feels counterintuitive. We as human beings believe that if we just really can beat ourselves up, then we'll change.
Right.
But the opposite is true. Just accepting and being curious and interested and then accessing motivation is how we get better.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
It's like
yeah,
the gospel.
Yeah.
But I think I mean, what you're saying makes sense, but it's so hard.
It feels the opposite of what you want to do. Mm-hmm. So I say you just test it in a little area. That's what I encourage you to do. Just test it out in a small area, like whatever it is that you're really hard on yourself about. Try being kind and see what happens.
Now, do you suggest speaking out loud to yourself, like look in the mirror and say, that was okay? Or do you think just sit and think about it?
You are a good person.
What's your process for this?
Yeah, really good question also. So yeah, I think speaking out loud can be great, but it's not necessary. We have 70,000 thoughts a day that go through our mind, and many of them are subconscious. So if you just can grab one or two and consciously direct them rather than letting them happen automatically, a really good way, Crystal, to do it is to journal. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm not talking about the kind of journal that you're going to hand off to your posterity. It's like a journal that no one will ever read.
Right.
Because you want to be able to access everything that's in there that's true. And some of it will be very ugly that you won't want to see. So getting your thoughts written down and seeing what they are and then redirecting your mind can be a good way to do it. I do it in my head all the time. I just, in my mind, I'll say things. I even will just call myself by name. I talk to myself in the third person. It helps me to be like, I know, of course you did that. That's what you're good at. And you're working on the next version of you. Mm-hmm. And, I'll say things like, I love you anyway. And I'm proud of the progress you're making, things like that. But it can be in your mind. I think if you have a minute to yourself in the mirror to say it out loud, even better.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. And I love how that's kind of a theme that you do, is saying, I love you to yourself. And
yeah.
My friend and I talk about that all the time. Just like, what is your first thought in the morning? Because it's never, I love you. It's like, wow. Like,
children, why'd you wake me up?
Yes.
That's my first thought.
Need more sleep.
Yeah. Right. Today we woke up to our kids fighting. And I thought immediately, I was like, oh, I'm going to yell today.
It's going to be that day. It's going to be one of those days.
This is a good theme for me today.
Didn't help that our youngest woke up at 4:30 in the morning and crawled into bed with us and refused to leave.
And see, when you're tired, your lower brain is driving even more of the time.
Right.
That's our problem. Yeah.
Okay,
we just don't sleep enough.
There you go. So too many kids.
Sleep is one of those important answers.
Sleep is an important answer, people. So definitely get the sleep that you need. So, I mean, those are everything that we've talked about so far is just really great advice. You know, gives us something to think about. But one of the other things that you mentioned that parents talk a lot about to you is that dealing with children who are either depressed or have anxiety, you know, throughout their ages, but primarily a lot of parents have expressed that they deal with teenagers in that aspect, but it could also affect our young kids as well. So, so how would you tell someone that, say I came to you and be like, I have a child that just beats himself up constantly and he's always, you know, saying negative things. How would you say I would go about addressing that?
Mm-hmm. This is such a good question. Thank you for bringing it up, because I think depression and anxiety is really rampant among our youth right now. And I think a big part of that is because of how we raise them as kids. There's also chemical imbalances and things like that that happen. So I'm not trying to dismiss any of that. And I'm all for seeking professional help when it's helpful. But for those of you listening that have young kids, I think that we can do them a huge service by not always trying to talk them out of what they're feeling. It's human nature for us as parents to want our kids to be happy.
All the time.
Right?
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm loving this weekend because my kids have all been happy. It feels like such a relief, right? When they're unhappy, a part of our wiring is I'm supposed to do something about that. Right? Which has, again, helped us survive as human beings for a very long time. But the problem arises when we teach them that it's not okay to have negative emotions and that they should resist them or suppress them or distract from them. And I believe one of the things that contributes to depression is over and over resisting and repressing negative emotion. So when your child is feeling whatever they're feeling, I have a son, he's now 10 years old, so it's getting a little better, but he's always been kind of down. He's hard to get happy or excited about anything. And he was always scared, even in elementary school. He's always scared that I wasn't going to pick him up or something. He's always scared of something. And I was always trying to explain to him why you don't need to be scared. And I didn't want him to be scared, right? But when I learned these tools, I learned that he needs to be scared right now. For whatever reason, he wants to be scared. And rather than teach him to resist it and suppress it and push it away, I just try to help him process it now. So I'll say things like, I can see that you're scared. And it's okay to be scared. And I just kind of give him a minute, and I'll even try to talk him through it. The way that we process emotion is we just allow ourselves to feel it. So I'll ask him questions like, what do you feel like when you're scared? What does your tummy feel like? Does your head feel different? And a lot of his answers are, I don't know, which is fine. I don't really need to know the answer. I'm just actually having him go into his body and process it and feel it and not talking him out of it.
Right.
Because if I think it's a huge problem that he's scared, that adds for him to his negative experience. Like, I'm scared and I'm upsetting mom. I'm not pleasing her. And this is a problem. Mom's trying to talk me out of it. And so they learn at a very young age that they shouldn't be upset or sad or scared or whatever it is. So I literally just give him time like that. And then when appropriate, it might be shortly after, or it might not be till the next day as they get older. I'll say, hey, remember yesterday when you were feeling that way? Let's talk about it a little bit. And then I offer him some tools and tips about why he doesn't really have to be scared if he doesn't want to. But in the moment, our kids need to be able to experience negative emotion. One other thing I'll add on this, the analogy I like to use is the airplane analogy. So everyone uses the airplane analogy to say, you know, they'll say, if we lose cabin pressure, secure your own oxygen mask before assisting your child. And we use that analogy to say that as parents, we have to take care of ourselves also. But I like to change up the analogy, and I say that we are not the parent on that ship. We are the flight attendant. Okay. So if the captain comes on and says, This is just turbulence, but please buckle your seatbelt, and you're a nervous flyer, then who do you look to see if it's really okay?
Yeah.
You look at the flight attendant, right? And if she's calm or he, and they're just reading a book, then you're like, okay, this is probably just turbulence. We're probably going to be okay. If you look at the flight attendant and they're looking nervous or panicking, then you're like, something is really wrong here.
We're all going to die.
Right? We're going to die again.
There's that lower brain.
The lower brain kicking in.
Exactly. And so when your child is going through a trial, even if it's a young child who's upset or a teenager who's struggling, when you're panicked, they're looking to you to see, like, right. Is this okay? Is this normal? Is this life? Or is the plane going down? And I think the best thing you can do for your child is to show them, like, of course you're upset. I see that you're upset. And you know what? I get upset sometimes too. And it's okay. You can handle it. You'll be fine. And here, you know, what does it feel like? You help them process it. And then you offer them some additional thoughts. But best thing you can do for your child is to not teach them to resist negative emotion or that it means the plane is going down.
Okay. Right. Because I think there's been times we have a child who struggles with the same, just like your son. But mm-hmm. I feel like I found myself saying, you're fine. You know.
Just get over it. It's
maybe not that harsh. Or I'll sit and talk with them and they won't listen to me about saying, you know, you didn't upset me and daddy, like, we love you so much. And they'll be like, no, you don't. You'll never love me. And at that point, I'm just like, I washed my hands. I'm leaving. So I think that's been a struggle for us.
Yeah, definitely.
And how would you change that from a parent's perspective that's feeling frustrated at their child's negative behavior? How can we overcome that?
Okay. So first, if you can, for your child, help them name the emotion. Maybe they can name it. But if you ask, even when I ask adults, what are you feeling? They have a hard time naming it. They'll give me a thought. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm feeling like this might not be good or whatever. They give you thoughts. And you want to name the emotion. Emotion is one word. Okay. So for a child, you can often say, it looks to me like you're sad. Does that seem right? Are you feeling sad? And so I've just named it sadness, mm-hmm. right? And just naming emotion right away starts to help your body process it. Emotion is just a chemical that's vibrating through your body because your brain's trying to warn you that there's danger, and it releases a chemical that doesn't feel good, right? To tell you this is a problem. You should do something about this. So I just say, it looks to me like you're feeling sad. Is that right? And then I talk them through, like, well, it's okay to be sad. And I get sad sometimes too. And then I just give them space or whatever they need. You know your child, right? My child, when he's upset, he wants to be left alone. And so I'll say, I love you and you can be sad and it's okay. And we all get sad. And when you're done being sad, then we'll talk about this. Mm-hmm. So really you want to just give them the permission because even something as subtle as you're okay is sending a message like it could be misinterpreted anyway. Like, you're fine. You don't need to be sad.
Yeah.
And that's what I did for a long time with my son until I learned to just allow him, okay, you're sad. And I'm not worried about you being sad. I'm sorry that you're sad, but it's okay to be sad. So just start by that. And then the next thing that you want to do, Crystal, is, again, you have to be managing your own mind to be able to do this. And so I, a lot of times, remind myself, I don't need to feel bad because he does. Mm. And I think my brain thinks that me feeling bad equals love and empathy for him, but it's not. It's actually adding to his burden.
That I need to fix this right now.
Yes. Because then I'm teaching him to resist it. So I tell myself, I can still feel good and allow him to feel bad if he chooses. But I have to manage, I used to have to tell myself that all the time. It's more natural now. But I'd have to ask myself, why do I need him to feel good in order for me to feel good? He's not in charge of my emotions. I am.
Right.
Yeah. So let me take it back and be the grown up and then give him space to have his own experience.
Okay.
No, that's really good. That's really good. And it just, this conversation has reminded me, Crystal will correct me if I'm wrong because I probably will be, but we read a research study, something that talked about, like, young adults, when they get into, you know, to be an adult, those that had trials throughout their life are more established and, you know, adults. They know how to handle, like, paying the bills and, you know,
They can
handle stress.
We talk a lot about...
And life better. Other than those that, you know, parents... Mm-hmm. Try to make sure everything's perfect in their life. But
we talk a lot about the phrase adulting.
Adulting. How people are always I don't want to adult today.
And we're like,
but you're an adult.
It's like the entire generation of us suddenly didn't know what to expect as adults.
We don't know how to do anything, apparently.
Yeah.
So, but you said that there's a rise in depression. So what made the change? Like, what made us want to fix our kids? That's more...
Well, I think that, I by no means am an expert in this area. This is just my own, you know, limited opinion here. But I really do think that, to your point, Barry, that we've had things pretty easy.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. We've been able to lead really blessed lives.
Right.
And
well, if we think about, like, our parents, or, you know, my parents and stuff, they went through, you know, some wars. Our grandparents went through World War II. Like, my grandpa served in World War II, and you know, they went through some, you know, and the Great Depression and other things. Of course, we've had some recessions ourselves, but nothing like the Great Depression was. And so they've had different experiences, and we're almost into the point where we've had so much success in life. To the point where We almost need something to happen to us to, like, get us back on track, you know, to help us understand.
Our trials can make us stronger, for sure, and help us function better as adults. But I think social media plays a role as well, because it distorts your perception of what's going on around you. So I think there's a lot of factors that influence it. But I think, you know, one of the things that we can do, and I do work with some teenagers and things as well, and that's what I'm teaching them, is how to process emotion. And what I find that it's tough for me to help a teenager if I'm not also coaching their parents. Because if your parent is trying to talk you out of feeling bad all the time, then you just keep repressing, and that those layers, I think, bottle up and become depression oftentimes.
Well, yeah, it's just kind of like, I just taught your son to do all these things, and now you're just taking away all the stuff I just taught him not to do.
Yeah.
So. Okay, so on the flip side, should we be responding to the positive part too? Like, if good things happen, is there a way to help that too?
Excellent question. Yes, same thing. I want to help them process all emotion. So when they're feeling good, I don't do it every time, but occasionally I will say, like, look, I can tell you're so excited. Doesn't that feel good? And we just take a minute. Again, I'm always naming the emotion, and I'll say it over and over again, especially when it's negative emotion. They don't realize it, but I just keep saying sadness is okay. I feel sad too. So yes, same thing with positive emotion. We let them really experience it. Like, you're so excited. Don't you love feeling excited? I love the feeling of excitement. I feel like I have energy in my whole body. Do you feel that way? So you take just a minute, again, especially depending on their age, but that's how I do it for my little kids.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. One more question about this. Is it important to put name ourselves in that process? Your dad and I feel sad that you feel sad, or does it matter that they recognize that we're a part of this, or is it just about them?
Well, I mean, partly what you're describing is showing empathy and your love for them. But I try to keep myself out of it when they're in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. So I would think, like, when it's the next day, you know, and you're having that follow-up conversation. But what I'm trying to avoid is having my emotions be an added burden to what my child is experiencing. So even if I'm sad because you're sad, just have to be careful about how you're wording it.
Yeah.
So in the midst of it, I just make it about them.
Okay.
And I try to manage my own emotions, because even if I don't say I'm sad for you, they can tell. Your kids can feel it, right?
Yeah.
So I have to genuinely be okay with it. And I don't want to feel happy about it, but I can be, like, at peace. Like, the plane, I tell myself all the time, the plane is not going down. This is a part of life. and they need to have this experience. This experience is going to serve them really well in some way. I'm glad that I'm here to help them through it.
Right.
And so I get to that place, and then I keep talking to them about how they can feel that, and it does. I don't have to be involved in it. The reason I do use a lot of like, yeah, I feel that way too, I understand that, is because I'm trying to keep naming the emotion and keep showing them that it's not a problem.
Right.
Yeah. No, it's all awesome. It's just great. We're getting a lot of good stuff here, people.
What I'm still hearing, though, is it all depends on us figuring out our upper brain.
We need to figure it out.
Yes.
Yeah.
It starts with us for sure. Yeah.
There was one more thing that we wanted to talk about before we let Jody go. And this is a big thing that a lot of parents deal with is the evil part of comparing yourself to others. And we all do it to different extents and different avenues and everything like that. And Jody wrote a really good blog post about it, and you could definitely find that on her website. We'll put a link in the show notes. But Jody, why do we feel we have to compare ourselves to our neighbors or to our friends or, you know, people?
First off, is this common?
Oh, is it common?
Yes.
Yes.
Sure. I think it's Brené Brown that says the only people that don't ever question, am I okay, are sociopaths. Oh. So congratulations.
Good job.
You're both not sociopaths. Yeah, yeah.
Or are we?
Or are you? So, this is, again, the lower brain that's concerned with our survival is concerned about, am I okay? Am I enough? Am I valuable? Am I important? How am I doing? Right. And so, you know, if you're a member of the LDS Church, then or if you're religious at all, probably, then you believe that you're a son or daughter of God. And so our value is automatic. But the lower brain doesn't believe that all the time. Right. So the higher brain knows it, but the lower brain is driving, again, 80% of the time. And so one of the ways it looks for how am I doing is just by comparing to other people.
Yeah.
So a couple things I would say to keep in mind are that, first of all, it is normal. But second of all, you're not going to compare yourself to somebody that's really different than you. There was a TED Talk I heard. I can't remember who it was by. But he talks about, like, we don't feel jealous of the Queen of England. And yet she has, like, tons of money and success and whatever,
or like movie stars, you know, like, even, you know, because we can't associate with that.
Yes, because it's so different from us. But so the people we compare ourselves to are, like you said, our neighbors, the people at church or what have you. So I like to remind myself, first of all, like, if I'm looking at someone and feeling bad about myself, I remind myself, well, this is good news. I must be very similar to them. Be feeling this, right? But the other thing I think that helps the most is just to have some mantras that you can give yourself, because I don't know how to completely get rid of that part. Again, I don't think we need to. That's sociopathic behavior. But if you can just redirect your brain with some mantras, some of the ones that I like are things like let's not compare my inside to other people's outsides.
Or Facebook.
Right? Let's remember that I can't possibly know that person completely and what's real for them. You know, sometimes it's things like everyone doesn't need to like me. It's my job to like me first and foremost, and I'm not for everyone. So that's a little bit different than comparison, but they tend to overlap, right? This desire to have everybody approve of us. So having some go-to mantras like that, I think are the best way that you just kind of redirect when it does happen. I think it always will happen to a certain extent.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, and it makes total sense about that. We do it with people that are close to us and we're familiar with it and everything. And I think it's just, you know, when you start comparing yourself to someone else, like asking yourself, well, why am I doing, like, looking in her, like, is there an emotion or is there a problem I'm having in my life that makes me feel like I need to compare myself to somebody else? You know, Crystal mentioned earlier, like, maybe we go to someone's house and we see that their house is, like, super clean.
Because I never compare that.
Me neither.
And you're just like, oh man, I wish my house could be like, you know, how do they do it? And maybe the real thing is like, oh, maybe I feel like my house needs to be more clean or something like that. And so just trying to recognize the thought process and the emotions that go behind why you're actually comparing yourself to someone is important to recognize.
Yeah. And what you're describing, Barry, is such a good point that it always comes down to our value, though, because if I'm looking and thinking, I wish my house were as clean as hers, then you keep going in that same line of questioning, because what would I make that mean? If my house were cleaner, maybe I'm a better wife or a more creative person or in some way more valuable. So what we're craving almost always is just to feel of our own value and worth. And so that then the question becomes, how can I get that? How can I feel more valuable? And that does have to do with your internal dialogue. Sometimes you'll get it from the people around you, but you have to be able to rely on yourself, your relationship with God, and all of that. That's ultimately what you're craving, even when you're like, oh, why doesn't my house look like that?
So quick question is, if there is someone in your life that you just almost like it's a toxic, you just can't stop comparing yourself, is it better to try to overcome that in the long term or just to avoid it?
Well, either way can work. I like you to do the harder work of overcoming it.
Dang it.
But, you know, you have to make those decisions one-on-one. I think another good way to begin is to ask yourself a really good question, because we're good at asking ourselves questions, but your mind will either just answer the question you give or it will say, I don't know. So if the question is, why isn't my house as clean as hers? My mind will either say, I don't know, and then that's not very valuable information to me, or it will come up with something painful, like because you're not as together as her or as creative, or she's so on top of it and you're not helpful again. To me, it's just shaming myself. So just change your question to something like, what do I really appreciate about her? And not make it about you at all is one way to do it, right? Because I find sometimes if there's somebody I'm feeling threatened by, I want to start to hate on them in my mind a little bit, right? So I try to switch it to like, what do I notice is unique about her that I appreciate and value, that I love about her? It doesn't have to have anything to do with me. I can take myself out of it altogether. Another way is to ask yourself a question like, what am I really good at? What do I notice I'm doing really well versus why am I not doing as well as her? So just notice your question and redirect it. There are certainly people that are easier to be around, that are easier for you to have positive thoughts around. And then there are people that it's going to be harder to. I just want you to keep the ownership and tell yourself the truth about it. And then if you want to avoid somebody because it's easier, you know, that's your decision, and we all do it at times.
Right.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I feel like the overarching theme here is to be kind to yourself.
Be kind to yourself.
I like that message.
We're all about being kind to our motto is we can always be better.
Yeah.
So we always say that, like, when something happens, like, oh, this week we didn't do this or we didn't do that, and then we're talking about it and we're just laying there in bed, you know, pillow talk. And then I say, well, we could always be better. And
it's Crystal, like our joke.
Crystal's like, shut up. She's like, you say that all the time. And I'm like, but we can. We can always
a plaque in our bedroom.
Always be better. So definitely. True.
Well, Jody, as we wrap up, will you tell us where people can find you?
Yes, definitely. You can find me on my website, boldnewmom.com. You can find my blog and my podcast is there, or you can, if you prefer, my podcast is also in iTunes. It's called Bold New Mom.
So, awesome. And we will have links in the show notes for easy access for you guys. And Jody, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule. I mean, it's in the evening. You could be just relaxing with your family, but you chose to come and give us and everyone such great advice. We appreciate your time and thank you so much.
I'm happy to do it. Thanks again for having me.
Definitely.
Thank you.
So thank you for listening to Clown Car. Parenting is hard, and we believe you should get a gold star just for trying.
Just remember, our way is not the only way. Find what works for you. You are doing a good job.
You can find us and share all your thoughts, of course, on all our social media. Facebook is always the best. And you can email us at theclowncarshow@gmail.com. And make sure you subscribe,
rate,
and review our show on iTunes. And until next time,
enjoy your circus.